I'll be reading from Jeremiah 17:10 if you'd like to follow along. It says, "I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings."
Let me first begin by saying, if you weren't here this morning and you didn't hear Josh's lesson on the sacrifice of Isaac, Abraham sacrificing, I would recommend that you listen to that online. It was a great lesson, a lot of thought-provoking things that maybe you hadn't thought about or I hadn't thought about before, but I just want to just ask you to listen to that again. And as Scott mentioned, that's the sermons are on podcast now, so if you do that, you can go ahead and listen to any of those sermons on the podcast. It's the fifth Sunday of the month, and so every quarter, usually one of the men, one of the elders, or if one of the other men are chosen, we just let Josh speak in the morning, and then one of the men will speak in the evening, and so that's why I'm up here. And so every fifth Sunday, you can expect to see someone else up here speaking in Josh's place. Gives Josh a chance to rest a little bit, and then he can critique us. He probably hears enough from us saying things good about him. So, but I want you to go ahead, and one of the things that we'll talk about this morning and then this evening, and Josh talked about it this morning, and we'll get to that verse later, not knowing what he was going to speak on, but yet it's in this lesson. And I spoke this lesson probably over a year or so ago, but one of the things, just like Peter says, you know, I will remind you. And I think some things, sometimes some lessons are good reminders. And so Proverbs 17:3, it talks about testing the heart. And it starts off by saying the refining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold. And so there's things for precious metals that we use to get rid of the impurities. And that's the refining pot, it says, for silver and the furnace for gold. But the Lord tests the hearts. There's no mechanism that we have on this earth. There's no pot that we can check our heart with or anything else. God's the one that does that. I want you to just go back and think about the word test. And it's used a great number of times in the Old Testament, in the New Testament. But the Hebrew word translated as test in the Old Testament is bakan. If I mispronounce that, come to me later and I'll try not to mispronounce it next time. But it means to examine, investigate, prove, or scrutinize. And that word is still very similar in the New Testament. The definition of that word in Greek is dokimazo. And it means to put to the test, prove, examine, and then by implication to approve. And so when we read these scriptures about what God puts people to the test, that's what he's doing, is he's proving them, he's examining them. And so there's three things that I'd like to look at this evening, but I want to ask you one question before we do this. If I ask you, why does God test our heart? If you had to think of that, just think about one, two, three, if more. I know that I have three that I'm putting up here, but if you want to have more, that's fine. Let me know. I could probably modify this in the future. But why does God test the heart? And I think when I go back to Genesis, the first chapter in verse 26, we look back and what the writer says is that God said, "Let us make man in our image according to our likeness." And when Adam was created and then Eve, they were created in his likeness and according to his image. So there are things that they have. They have an internal soul. Josh preached a sermon about the soul, purifying the soul, not about 2 weeks ago, I think it was, Josh. So when you look at those things, is that part of it is that we're made, and we need to remember that we're made in the image of God. But Eve and then Adam fell, and that changed their lives completely, as well as their children and every generation after that. But God tests the heart because he wants to see, I've created man, and we have in our image and in our likeness. And therefore, we need to be like God. So let's consider three reasons why God tests our hearts. And like I said before, if there's more, please let me know. If you think of one afterwards, I would love to hear it. First one is that his tests build our faith in him. And when you look at the scriptures that we're going to be going through this evening, that's a lot of it, his tests are really to kind of prove us, but to help us build our faith in him. The second one is his tests to us prove our love for him. And a lot of people say, well, I love God, but yet they don't do anything that his word tells them to do. And then the last one that I have down, his tests strengthen our spiritual endurance to reach our heavenly home. And so we talk about that, you know, about running this race. And so God's word helps us through the good times and the bad to give us that spiritual endurance that we need to make. But I want you to go back and I want you to look at Deuteronomy, the 8th chapter, if you're going to turn to your Bible. But the first three verses, Deuteronomy 8, verse 1, God speaking to them as they came out of the wilderness and getting ready to go into the land. He says, every command which I command you today, you must be careful to observe. And so that was one of the testing points for them, and that's a testing point for us today as well. Is he said, look, you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. And so God said, be careful to observe those things which I command you. Verse 2, he says, and you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness. And this is part of it. He says, to humble you and to test you and to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So that's part of it. When they were in the wandering 40 years in the wilderness, it tells us that he says it was to humble them, to test them, and also to know what was in their heart. And then the third verse in Deuteronomy 8 says, and so he said, so he humbled you. He allowed you to hunger. He fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And a lot of us remembered that Jesus, that was Jesus' response to Satan. Remember when he came out of the 40 days in the wilderness and he was tempted? And that was Jesus' response to Satan, is that, look, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And so no one likes to be tested. I can tell you, if I ask any of my grandsons or ask any of these other young people, or think back when you were going through school or college or whatever the case may be, you didn't like to be tested. Nobody likes to be tested. But we are going to be tested. And so we need to think about these things, is that we need to prepare ourselves for when we come and we begin to get tested. Our faith is tested. And so we need to prepare ourselves. And so when God's tests come, they don't always kind of come when you expect them. A lot of times they come in unexpected times and moments in our lives. And so there's things that when we happen, we go, how many of us have said in here, why me? Why now? Why is God doing this? Why is God allowing this to be done? And that makes me think back when we go back and you look in Genesis, the 6th chapter, verses 1 and then 13 and 14. When Noah, he came to Noah and he says that Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. So Noah found pleasure in the sight of God when no one else could. And God said to Noah, he says, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. And so God let him know what was going on. I want you to think about the time that Noah had to spend and his sons building this ark. You think as every day as these people came by, you're like, what are you doing? But just think about the things. If he didn't build that ark with the specifications that God gave him, if he didn't use gopher wood, he didn't build it this long and this high and this one little window, would that ark have floated? God was testing Noah's faith. And so he said, you know, make yourself an ark. Hebrews, the 11th chapter, the chapter on faith, says, look, by faith, being divinely warned of the things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. The other thing is, like, when we are tested, it requires action on our part. We just can't sit back. Noah didn't sit back on his hands and do nothing. He worked. And it's interesting to me, when you look at Hebrews, the 11th chapter and verse 7, just look at the words that are underlined, what Noah did. He was divinely warned. And what did he do? He moved with godly fear. He prepared an ark. And he condemned the world through his actions, and he became the heir of righteousness. So therefore, when we're tested, it's not time for us to sit back. It's time for us to move forward. And so that's what Noah did. And so we can learn from his example, is that we need to move. We need to act on what we're doing. The second thing I put was, like, God tests will provide new challenges for us to overcome. If you were tested growing up and you always received the same test, would that benefit you? I'm waiting for Josiah. I thought I heard Josiah say no. But being tested on the same thing over and over and over again, it doesn't benefit you at all. And so sometimes our children, when they're growing up, sometimes we put them to the test. And we'll do things, and what we'll do is we'll have them and we'll test them a certain way so they can learn and they can grow. And that's what God's test will do for us. He'll put forth new challenges that we've never faced before. And so when I was talking about this morning, Josh's lesson was in Genesis, the 22nd chapter. And this is where he just comes right out and he says it in verse 1. He says, "Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham." And it goes back to the verse that we read earlier in Jeremiah 17:10. Is that God tests the hearts and the minds of people. And he says right here that God tested Abraham. And he said to him, "Abraham," and then he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you." Josh, I talked about some of the things this morning. I said, you know, when you're going through that, there are things that I was seeing. I was going like, okay, is he going to talk about this and talk about that? And it was like this little checkbox. It's like, okay, this, this, and this. The other thing I thought was pretty interesting is as you read through the reading that we did this morning, is that Abraham had this same response three times when he said, "Here I am." And we read the first one here, is when the Lord says, "Abraham," and he goes, "Here I am." Here's a man that's ready for action, at least when I read that. "Here I am." And then the next one, do you remember what the next one was? Remember when his son said, "Father," and what did he say? "Here I am." And the thing that was interesting to me, too, is that what did he say? "I see the fire and I see the wood," is what Isaac said, "but where's the lamb?" Do you remember what Abraham's response was? "God will provide." And as I was reading through this and I was preparing for this lesson, it also made me think. I want you to think about this, those of you who have children or had children when they're younger, or people that you work with, people that you go to school with. People are watching you. But it made me think about Isaac. What was his response when he looked around? He says, "Well, I see fire, I see wood. Where's the lamb?" He grew up witnessing his father making sacrifices after sacrifices. He knew something was missing. And I think one of the things that pointed out to me is that we need to think about people are watching us. And they know by our actions, especially our children, is that we need to be a good example to them. So when they grow up, they'll know what to do and the right moves to make. But he said that you go to the land of Moriah, offer him as a burnt offering on the mount of, on one of the mounts of which I will tell you. And I'm not going to go, Josh did a great job on that this morning, so I'm looking, but when you go by Hebrews, the 11th chapter, and we talk about this being the chapter of faith, it says, by faith, when he was tested. Here goes that word again. It was in the Old Testament, Genesis 22, and now it's being repeated again in Hebrews 11, when he says, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. And we talked about this, and Josh did, is that, you know, figuratively he's going like, if God makes me take his life, God will raise him up again. Because this is the seed. It's my seed. And the world will be blessed through him. Going back to Genesis, the 22nd chapter, verse 8, I just wanted to go and mention this again. As he said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. And so the two went. The other thing that kind of makes what makes me think is when God tests us and we pass these tests, God will provide. It may not seem like what we're going through right now is like, how am I going to get through this? But most of the time we make it through and we look back and we're saying, like, I'm glad I went through that. I learned these lessons. But God will provide, just as he told Abraham, and Abraham told his son that God would provide for him. And then the third one I had this evening is that God's test will reveal what we value most in our lives. And that's the biggest thing I think that we struggle with today in this country, is that there are so many things that are pulling towards us. You see it on TV, you see it, and you just see how people's actions are. You just watch your kids, the kids, children of others, the things that they desire, what's important to them. But just watch, and it'll reveal what's most important to you and to me, even in our lives. What do we value more than salvation? And I like to just go back and look at Acts, the 7th chapter, and begin in verse 55, when it says, but Stephen, being full of the Holy Spirit, gazed into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God, and said, look, I see the heavens open and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God. And they stoned Stephen, starting in verse 59, and they stoned Stephen as he was calling on God and saying, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit. And then he knelt down and he cried out with a loud voice, Lord, do not charge them with this sin. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. And so we look at Stephen, and we look at what did he value most in his life? He could have just stopped. Like, after the first stone hit him, he could say, wait, stop. Let's just back up here. I'm going to go ahead and take back everything I said. He didn't do that. But the most important thing was to him, it was to be pleasing to God. And he lost his life over it. And when we go back and we look at Acts, the 22nd chapter, I think it's interesting that Paul goes back and he talks about Stephen. In verse 19 through 21, he says, and so I and Paul, so we know who's speaking, he says, said, Lord, they know that in every synagogue I imprisoned and beat those who believe on you. And when the blood of your martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by, consenting to his death and guarding the clothes of those who were killing him. And then he, the Lord, said to me, depart, for I will send you far from here to the Gentiles. Paul looked back. He remembered that day, I'm sure, vividly. Because he said, look, they know I've imprisoned, I've beat people. But he says, I was there. I was standing, watching all of this. I was consenting to his death. I was even guarding their clothes. But the Lord said, look, depart, for I will send you far from here to the Gentiles. So I want us to go back a little bit further when the Lord met Paul on that road to Damascus. And do you remember who he met and who he said, you need to go talk to Paul? Remember when he talked to Ananias? He said, but the Lord said to Ananias in chapter 9, verse 15 and 16, he says, go, for he, Paul, is a chosen vessel of mine to bear my name before Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel. For I will show him how many things he must suffer for my name's sake. And so when I look at this and I think about what he's saying, he's just like, he's a chosen vessel. And I know the kind of man that he is, and I know how faithful he's going to be, and I know how many tests he's going to have to endure. But he comes down and he says, for I will show him. And we might as well say, I will test him, and I will show him how many things he must suffer for my name's sake. And we read and we know how many things that Paul suffered. We know what was important in Paul's life. He said, look, I know how to abound and I know how to be abased. I know how to live with and without. But he says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And so that's what we need to remember, is that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. Is that when we are tested and we don't think that we can make it, we just got to take that next step. We just got to keep taking the next step. And sometimes we fail. Sometimes some of us fail miserably. But we have to get up. There was a quote that I use every once in a while. It says, look, don't look back. You're not going that way. We've got to keep our eyes and our minds on the prize, what's ahead of us. And that's what we need to do, is we need to focus moving forward. And so this verse always amazes me that we're getting ready to read. But I look at it and I said, how would we have fared if we were tested like some of those in the Old Testament? Sometimes we think our life is hard. It's not. We have not suffered anything like many of those in the Old Testament did. But Hebrews, the 11th chapter, when it gets down to the end of this, this almost kind of, it just, the power of this phrase just, it always heals me. It hits me really hard, because he says, others were tortured, trials of mockings and scourgings, of chains and imprisonment. Have any of us gone through that? Not that I know of. Stoned, sawn in two, tempted, slain with a sword, wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, afflicted, tormented. And then the Hebrew writer makes this statement, of whom the world was not worthy. And sometimes we may see people suffer. And it's just like, remember when Job's wife says, curse God and die. What are you putting up all of this? Is your integrity that so important to you? But this statement in verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy. These people went through tests that you and I have not gone through. And I hope that we don't. But there could be a time. And then he ended saying, they wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves. Those things we've never done. But these were tested, and they passed the test. So what I would like to, and I've had this statement before, is look, don't pray for an easy life. That's what sometimes our prayer is. Let's just take it easy on me. Let me have an easy life. But what we really need to be praying for is for the faith and the strength to endure a difficult one. When you read about those in the Old Testament and a lot of those in the New Testament, those Christians, I'm sure they were praying for endurance. But we need to pray for faith and strength to endure a difficult one. I ask Taylor to read this one before, but we'll go over it again. Jeremiah 17, verse 10, and he says that I, the Lord, search the heart. So just think about that for you and me. God says, I search the heart. I test the mind. And then even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings. And so God tests the mind, and he searches our hearts. And so that we need to remember those things. When times seem to be getting tough, it could be a test, and we just have to keep going through it. Pray about it, ask for strength to overcome it. And I'd like you to remember these three numbers. And some of you may already remember, may know what they mean. But remember 521. It's not my street number, yours either probably, but remember 521. Matthew, the 25th chapter, beginning in verse 14, he says, "For the kingdom of God is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2 talents, and to another 1. Now, what's really interesting about this master as he travels, he just doesn't give them just all of them 5. He says to each according to his own ability. He knew what they had the ability to do. And he says, gave 1, 5, 2, 1, but it was all based on their ability. And he says, then immediately he went away on a journey. And so we're going to skip through those about the 5 and the 2 talents, but we're going to focus on the last one, the man who had 1 talent. Matthew, the 25th chapter, beginning in verse 24, he says, "And then he who had received the 1 talent came and said," it's a time of accounting, right? All these men, "You gave me 5, I earned 5. You gave me 2, I earned 2. Here comes the man with a lowly 1 talent. And he says, "Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. And look, you have what is yours." He wasn't looking to do what his master wanted him to do. Just do the best that you can. But he was afraid. And sometimes that's what happens to us, is that maybe we fear God to the point where we don't do anything. But he says, "Look, I was afraid, and I went and I hid your talent in the ground." And then he tried to do this. "Here, I'm going to give you what's yours. Haven't lost anything, haven't gained anything, but you get it back." But he says, "But his Lord answered and said to him, 'You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers. And at my coming, I would have received back my own with interest.'" You should have done something, but you chose to do nothing. And he called him a wicked and lazy servant. I hope that's not said about me, that you are a wicked and lazy servant. And so it goes on, it says, "So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. To everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable, wicked, lazy servant into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." What's interesting is that this is how sometimes people in the world view it. That's how they say, "I'm just not going to do anything." But my plea for you and for me is, don't be the 1 talent servant. Don't be the one that's so fearful that you don't do anything. We all sometimes, especially those who have worked in the business world or whatever, it says, look, you need to step outside the box. You need to do something and challenge yourself for something that you've never done before. That's the only way that you're going to grow. You can't stay in this little box, and that's what that 1 talent guy did. He stayed in the box. He didn't do anything. So don't be the one talent servant. And this is the one that made me think about this one. In Psalm 10:13, he says, "Why do the wicked renounce God?" Question that the psalmist says, why do the wicked renounce God? And then he says, this one, the wicked has said in his heart, "You will not require an account." God's not going to require an accounting of me. That's their mindset. And you see people in this world today, that's their mindset. God is love. He's not going to require anything from me. I don't have to do anything. They just renounce God. But he says in his heart, God's not going to require an account. But we need to remember what Peter said in 1 Peter 4, verses 4 and 5, when he says, in regard to these, he says, "They think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation." And so he's looking at it and he's going like, your friends, you've come out of the world, and now your friends are looking at you going like, come on, man. Do this with us. Go here with us. And you're saying, not going to do it. And he says, they speak evil of you. But then the verse goes on and he says, but they'll give an account to him who's ready to judge the living and the dead. Those who think that they're not going to have to give an accounting, Peter said, look, they'll give an account. We'll all give an account. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So we're all going to give an account. Ecclesiastes 12, in the end of that book, when Solomon writes down, he says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Just like, fear God and keep his commandments. Remember, we just read about those. Is that about Noah? Noah was one who feared God. He was one that kept his commandments. Abraham did the same thing. He had a fear and a respect towards God, and what did he do? He kept his commandments, and his commandments got him to move and take action. And when God told him to do something, he did it. There wasn't any of this, wait a minute, this is my only son. Do you know what you're doing? He just took. And like Josh said this morning, he rose up early the next morning. He didn't wait around. We have no sense that God, did he ask God, well, what time do you want me to go? Which day of the week? Can I go next month? None of that. It said he arose the next morning and went. So fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. And it goes back to that wicked, the one who renounces God. God's not going to give me an account. Solomon says, oh yeah, he will. It says, for God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So think about this as we're getting ready to close out this lesson this evening, is that opportunity may knock only once. We have opportunities that present themselves to us every day. It may only knock once. But we have to take an opportunity to work and to do. But the second part of this quotation is, but temptation leans on the doorbell. Don't think that you overcome one temptation and that's it. I'm not going to be tempted again. Opportunity may knock only once, but look, temptation is going to hit you every day. It's going to be right there on your doorbell, ringing your doorbell. You may be strong one day, but the next day you may fall prey to whatever that temptation is. In James, the first chapter, verses 2 through 5, James said, look, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Here we go. Knowing that the testing of your faith, that's what God does. He tests our faith. By the things that are presented before us, do you have faith in me? We'll see. And so James says, look, count it all joy. That's one of the hardest things that we have to do sometimes is when we face difficult things in our life is that we need to be joyful about them. But the thing is that we will always, if we can win and overcome that, we come out the side, the next side, the other door, stronger than when we came in. And so he says, the testing of your faith produces patience. And but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And here's the help that we get. He says, but if any of you lacks wisdom, if you lack wisdom on how to get through this test, pray to God. He says, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. We just have to have the faith. We need to ask God to help us through this. But we just can't ask God and then sit on our hands and be a one-talent person. We got to get up and move. We got to pray, and we got to keep pushing forward and pushing forward and pushing forward. So remember this. God's test will build our faith in him. That's what it's all about. Do you have faith in God? His test will increase and build your faith. Prove our love for him. How much do we really love God? We say that we do. God's test may prove us totally wrong. And then it'll strengthen our spiritual endurance as we run the race before us. And that's what it takes, a spiritual endurance. Every single day is that we get up and we have to go forward. And we have to endure. And so we can run this race, live this life without hope of reaching that eternal home in heaven with God, with Jesus and the angels. So I'll close with this thought. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. It says, look, trust in the Lord with all your heart. And that's what we need to do, is that we need to trust in him. Not ourselves, not somebody else in this room, not our best friend, not our mom, dad, or whatever. The proverb, Solomon says, look, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Not half of your heart, not a quarter of your heart, but with all your heart. And then lean not on your own understanding. You don't have the answers to everything, but God does. And God knows what's best for us. And then in him, in all your ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. And that's what we need to do, is that we need to acknowledge him. We're told that in everything give thanks. Everything. And sometimes when you're going through a rough time, maybe that's time to give God thanks, but ask him to help us through those periods. So in all your ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Hopefully this will help us all look this evening about how are we tested. And maybe you were tested last week. Maybe you were tested yesterday. Maybe you were tested this afternoon. And maybe you passed that test, and maybe you didn't. But we need to remember that God will test us to see what our faith is, our love for him, and whether we have the endurance to make it through. If we can help you this evening to be obedient to his word, we'll ask you to come as we stand and sing number 344, Who at My Door is Standing?